You've got questions, we've got answers. I'm ready. Let's do it.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to the broadcast. It is our Friday show, which is extra fun. Every day on radio is wonderful, sacred privilege, but a great joy. But Friday's extra fun because you've got questions, we've got answers. Whichever questions in the world you want to ask on any subject whatsoever, as long as they're appropriate for Christian radio in areas where I can help you, give me a call. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. You know, I have a little dream. I don't know that it'll ever come to pass. I'm not expecting it. I'm a man of faith and optimism, but I don't have a lot of confidence in this one. But I just have a little dream that one day all the people, believers, non-believers, all the people who post really nasty comments on our social media sites, our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, our YouTube channel, in response to my articles and different sites, that rather than just post the comments, which they're free to do, they'd actually call in the show and talk to me about their issues. It's the rarest of rare when that ever happens. You say, well, look, Mike, not everybody is free at this time of the day to call. Oh, well, there are always people free to call because we get tons of calls through the week. That's one thing. And out of the multiplied thousands that have time to post nasty comments, of course, they're dwarfed by people making constructive comments and worthy comments, but certainly there are people that have time to call. So don't just post your confrontational comment and call me out. Give me a call. Perhaps I can enlighten you. Perhaps I can change your perspective. Perhaps you could help me with a blind spot. Oh, wouldn't that be amazing? 866-348-7884. Any question of any kind that's appropriate for Christian radio, phone lines are now open. I do want to talk to you first, though, about today's March for Life, the 44th annual March for Life. And I wrote an article last night, The March for Life and the Anti-Trump Women's March, a study in contrast, telling you in advance what was going to be different about the March for Life and last weekend's Women's March. Now, I wrote it in advance, not because you needed some special prophetic revelation in order to do it, but because this is self-evident. We've watched this enough over the years. We have seen this enough over the years to know what to expect. And I said there are going to be three areas of contrast. One will be the media coverage of the events. The media was all over the Women's March. I mean, this was a happening thing, quote after quote, footage and more articles. And I understand it was a major event. I understand it was a major negative response to the inauguration of President Trump. At the same time, we've watched for decades how the March for Life is virtually ignored. I remember when I lived near D.C., And we had friends and colleagues, part of our congregation, very active in pro-life movement. And there'd be a massive march. And then you'd wait. We'd watch the news at night. It was before cable or anything like this. So we'd watch the local news coverage because this is big news. This was the big news of the day in terms of what actually happened in our area. And right towards the end of the, say, the 11 o'clock news at night, right towards the end, there'd be a short story. And rather than show the massive crowds and rather than have clips of the speakers, you know what they would do? They would interview two of the pro-life marchers and two protesters. Maybe there are 250,000 marchers and 20 protesters, if that many. And they'd interview two from each side, and that was the coverage. That's the first area of contrast. The second is the spirit of the events will be totally different. And the third, the ideology of the events will be totally different. God turn the hearts of our nation to life. We'll be right back.
fire we want, for fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. As much as I questioned Donald Trump's pro-life commitment early in the campaign and then became more convinced that this was something important to him as well, it's really remarkable. Vice President Pence speaking at the March for Life today in D.C., first vice president to ever do that. Kellyanne Conway, the campaign manager during the campaign and now a key spokesperson for the Trump administration, she spoke at the event. And while Donald Trump had an interview, it was an ABC reporter. I don't know if this part got aired, but he brought up the March for Life and said that he understands the press doesn't cover it. He didn't know how the numbers would compare to the Women's March, but he said, yeah, he hears the press doesn't cover it, which is a standard thing. My friend Eric Metaxas, addressing the crowd today, actually called on people, Katie Couric and others, did you get this? Did you catch this? And one of the things that I said in terms of the spirit of the event being different is that one is going to be redemptive in its tone. You had the angry rhetoric of people like Madonna, who I understand Eric prayed for at the rally today. You have that rhetoric, and you know she has thoughts of blowing up the White House. And I'm sure she didn't get booed at the Women's March for saying it. She walked back on that a little bit subsequently, but obviously those are serious, ugly comments to make for you know a pop icon of that kind. But and Ashley Judd, actress Ashley Judd, even. Well, just extremely vulgar, unrepeatable comments about Donald Trump. That being some of the tone, not all of it, but some of the tone of the Women's March. And I assure you, and I can assure you in advance, that none of the speakers at the pro-life event today were or are calling for blowing up of abortion clinics or talking about how they dream about doing that. And one will have a tone of redemption and life. 866-34-TRUTH. You can read my latest article on our website, thelineoffire.org. It is called The March for Life and the Anti-Trump Women's March, a study in contrast. Also, if you missed my article, we posted yesterday morning. It's gone viral since on my meeting with Pastor Joseph Prince. Then by all means, check that out also on the website, thelineoffire.org. We're getting a tremendous amount of positive comments from people appreciating the fact that we sat down to talk in the midst of our differences, and emphasized our areas of commonality, and we want to continue to have dialogue. And our areas of commonality far outweigh our areas of difference, and we do have differences, but with respect to each other in the Lord. But as expected, and I knew it, and I told him, and of course he expected it, that. I'm going to get blasted for even meeting with him, for even talking with him, for even acknowledging him as a brother in the Lord. And I'm sure he'll get blasted by some for meeting with me. But that's fine. That is an absolutely small price to pay if we can exalt Jesus, call people to holiness, call people to true grace, expose counterfeit grace, and continue to dialogue about our differences. That's a small price to pay. But if you have a question about it, please give me a call. I welcome it. I'm not offended by it whatsoever. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's start with Alan in Springfield, Virginia. Welcome, sir, to the Line of Fire. Hello, Alan. Are you there? Alan has gone silent. All right, Howard's going to look for you in a little while, see if you're still there. We go to Ann in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
How you doing, Dr. Brown?
I'm blessed. Thank you.
I'm blessed, too. I really enjoy listening to your program, and I just wanted to make a comment. We need to respect the will of God. You know, Donald Trump is our president, and the Bible tells us to pray for those in authority, and we have to accept the powers that be ordained of God, and that, you know, we just have to put our trust in God, and we need to pray, and we need to, our country needs to come together, and that's all I'd like to say.
Well, you're absolutely right, Ann, and bless you for that attitude. I know that during the presidency of Barack Obama, that many of my conservative friends spent far more time criticizing and attacking and far less time praying. And I think that's what we all tend to do, whatever side of the equation we're on, we tend to do that. It could be the same if we're having a problem in our church, that we'll be critical of the leadership more than we'll pray. And if instead we'll say, yeah, here's where we have an honest difference, here's where we have a concern, here's where we have an issue to raise, and we do that, but we give ourselves more to prayer, the world would look like a whole different place. And as I said, I deeply differed with policies of Barack Obama, but he was my president nonetheless, and I respected that office, and I know that there was some good that he did, but I feel there was much bad that he did. Either way, he was my president. Now Donald Trump is your president. That's the way it works. So, Anne, amen to your perspective. Thank you. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Marilyn in Maryland. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi. This is my opinion. I firmly believe that God will never truly bless this nation until, well, many things, but especially until we support Israel and until we stop killing babies. And at one time before I knew the Lord and I was pregnant as a young person, I used to wish for something like Roe versus Wade before it was passed. Mm. But now I know it's an abomination.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And
I let my daughter be adopted, and I've been able to meet her one time since then, and it was a real blessing.
Wow. So good. You didn't feel you could bring her into this world, but rather than stopping her from coming into this world, you gave her up for adoption.
Yeah.
Yeah, and let me say this. When you say it's your opinion that God won't fully bless us until we stop aborting babies, it's not just your opinion. You're 100% right. God hates the shedding of innocent blood. God cares about the little ones. It's amazing mercy that we have not received more severe judgment than we have, and we plead for mercy all the time because we deserve judgment. For this one sin alone, we deserve judgment. May God have mercy. May God turn hearts. May God do something miraculous and seemingly impossible during the administration of Donald Trump. Again, what a surprise that would be to see God use a man with a past like his and a background like his, use him in a way that would bring life and blessing to the nation. May it be so. Hey, thank you for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Laura in Brooklyn, New York. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
How are you, Dr. Brown?
I'm doing really well.
I had a question regarding Matthew chapter 24. Actually, when I was on hold, I wanted to look into it because I didn't want to misquote anything. But 24:24, could you elaborate on that first?
Certainly. One thing in Matthew's gospel, Matthew chapter 24, has parallels in Mark 13 and in Luke 21. It's called the Olivet Discourse because he gave this discourse while sitting on the Mount of Olives. And you have to understand that there are two dimensions to it. There's the dimension of events that happened in the year 70 with the destruction of the temple. And then there are the events that happen at the end of the age when Jesus returns. And there are parallels with both of them. We have this with Old Testament prophecy as well, that there'll be destruction that came on Judah in the past, but then it's a prophecy of a future judgment or a trying an attack as well. So false messiahs and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. So let's say that we're looking at this as an end-time prophecy and something that could have relevance in advance. It's a debate, Laura, as to whether this is saying that it's possible to deceive the elect or it's not possible to deceive the elect. In other words, they'll perform great signs and wonders to lead astray even the elect if that were possible. So the question is Jesus saying it is possible or it's not possible? Why give the warning if it's not possible, right? And why does Paul write, for example, 2 Corinthians 11, that he's concerned that just as Eve was deceived by the serpent, that the Corinthian believers who were elect that they would be deceived? Or why does Paul write to the Galatians who were elect and ask, who has deceived you? So I take the words, if possible, to mean if we will open up the door to deception, if we will not be people based in the Word of God and a holy life and a submitted life, then we could be deceived by these false messiahs and false prophets. So that's how I understand it. But there's no reason for us ever to be deceived, because we're forewarned by the Lord and we have everything we need in Him by His Word, by His Spirit, through the help of the body, never to be deceived. So if we heed the warnings, we'll never be deceived. Hey, I appreciate the call. God's blessings to you. We'll be right back with more of your calls. You've got questions, we've got answers.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
According to GOP Rep. Chris Smith, he says this is a turning point for the right to life at the March for Life, the 44th annual March for Life. It's sad that we've had so many and still Roe v. Wade not overturned, but by God's grace, things will continue to change, and most importantly, change in the hearts and lives of Americans. Mike Pence, according to Anika Smith, who is from the stream and is live tweeting from the event, Vice President Mike Pence praises gentleness, compassion, and love to the pro-life crowd. Let this moment be known for love, not anger. Pence asked crowd to meet moms with compassion, not condemnation. Compassion is overcoming convenience, and hope is beating despair. We must meet this moment with respect and compassion for every American, so says our dignified pro-life vice president. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, before I go back to the phones, which I'm going to do momentarily, I've got a very important announcement for everyone listening by radio. If you're listening by internet or podcast, this is not, well, it's a great announcement, but it's not as critical. If you're listening by radio, God willing, in the years ahead, we will greatly expand our radio footprint to get into many other places where we are not currently in America. In the process, there may be a point where we have to step back from certain stations we're on before we expand. We are very soon going to be releasing an app. It's going to be a phenomenal app. I sound like Donald Trump. It's going to be a fabulous app. It's going to be a great app. No, it's just about finished and ready to go. And with this app, you'll just be able, you want to listen to the show, we're not on your radio station, you're anywhere you are in America, as long as you have cell phone service, boom, you just click on it. Click on that app, okay, and you'll listen to the radio right there. Want to call? Boom, press a button, and you can just call. You want to check out our latest articles, video, boom, you'll be able to do it. So stay tuned. If at any point we are not on your local radio station, or if you're driving and out of range, or if you only get the first half hour or hour and you want to listen to all 2 hours, we'll have the app available very soon. As long as you have a cell phone, you won't miss a minute. So if at any point, we'll give you notice if there's a programming change, but if that happens and you have the app, you'll never miss a minute of The Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's see. We'll go to Don in Waldorf, Maryland. Welcome to The Line of Fire.
How you doing?
Doing very well. Thank you.
The question I have is I've seen through presidential elections and stuff like that where, you know, they get behind another president when he becomes elect and everything else. But I've heard a lot of more negative stuff about Barack Obama than I have about Donald Trump. And my concern is that I'm not trying to put in race, but why is it that everybody now wants to support Donald Trump not what Barack Obama was trying
to do. I can help you with that, Don. How many hundreds of thousands of people marched in the streets and protested right after Barack Obama was inaugurated? Didn't happen, did it? But it happened with Donald Trump. How much was CNN, MSNBC, ABC, NBC, CBS blasting Barack Obama when he was elected, calling him a liar? They didn't. They were praising him to the hilt. What it is, Don, is that you're listening more to conservative media. If you listen to liberal media, they were praising President Obama for 8 years and mocking those who opposed him. If you listen to conservative media, they were attacking Barack Obama for 8 years. So it's all a matter of who you're listening to. Donald Trump is subject to the worst, ugliest criticism of any president so far in memory, to the point that the media is embarrassing itself.
No, it's not true, because the thing I heard, especially from Boehner, and he was a Republican Speaker of House, and he said, quote unquote, that I will do everything possible to make sure that anything he passes through will not go through, whether it was good or bad.
But Number one, he didn't do it.
Hang on.
I want to help you. You called the show. I want to help. Don. Here's the problem. You're not listening. How can you tell me what you're hearing if you're not listening, sir? So let's try this again. I want to help you, okay? I am trying to help you. That's what John Boehner said, if you're quoting him accurately. I can't verify that, but let's say you are. They didn't do it. Chuck Schumer and other Democrats have said they will fight tooth and nail against things Donald Trump wants to do. You're only listening selectively. It has zero to do with race. In fact, there is more attack on Donald Trump for being white than there was attack on Barack Obama for being black, if you want to make race an issue. I'm hearing all this anti-white stuff day and night and day and night and day and night, because I was not hearing it with Barack Obama. In fact, I did a show, even though I was not happy that President Obama was elected, I did a show to celebrate the fact that we had our first black president, asking black callers to call in to share how they felt and what a great day it was for them to see this breakthrough in the White House, even though I knew I was going to disagree with his policies, I still wanted to honor the man and honor the moment. But in point of fact, Don, the attacks on Donald Trump, Chris Matthews referred to his inaugural speech as Hitlerian. The actors, the actresses ranting about him. Madonna's having thoughts of blowing up the White House. Ashley Judd speaking of things I can't repeat on the radio. I'm not even going to say more than that. Other speakers with some of the most vile imaginable comments. So, yes, there has been steady attack on the conservative side against Barack Obama while he was president, and some resistance from the Republicans, although not much, really. They wimped out. And there is liberal attack against Donald Trump. Watch CNN, watch MSNBC for a night. Check the comments of congressional leaders like Chuck Schumer and others about what they're going to do. In fact, even threatening that if his Supreme Court appointee is not so-called mainstream, which would probably mean liberal, Schumer, he's going to fight it tooth and nail. Whereas one major reason Donald Trump was elected was so that he would appoint pro-life justices. That's why many voted for him. Hey, listen, Don, just a word of wisdom. I'm happy to talk with you in the future, but you got to listen. You got to listen. Otherwise, I can't help you. All right? And then we'll sort this out together. But I assure you, Barack Obama was not criticized for 8 years because of his race. And Donald Trump is not getting a free pass. The liberals are all over Trump. The conservatives are all over Obama. That's the way it is. Hey, make sure you check out our latest videos and articles at thelineoffire.org. You do not want to miss them.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the line of fire, 866-348-7884. The March for Life, it's not going to be marked by anger, hatred. It's not going to be marked by identity politics. You had, it's just too gross. I wrote it, but it could be kids being picked up by parents. This is just too gross. One of the signs at the Women's March, but there was just a lot of, let's call it, feminine vulgarity. I don't know how else to say it, and all kinds of inappropriate images and comments and a stream of hatred at the Women's March. I understand that women have concerns about Donald Trump being misogynist or anti-immigrant or anti-Muslim and things like that. I understand why people have concerns. In point of fact, though, the tone, some of the speakers, radical feminists like Ida Hurtado and Gloria Steinem, extreme media leftists like filmmaker Michael Moore, CNN commentator Van Jones, transgender activists like Janet Mock, Raquel Willis, or a woman like Donna Hilton, who spent 27 years in prison for her role in the brutal kidnapping, torture, and murder of a man. They were listed as speakers at the Women's March, and Donna Hilton was talking about standing up in solidarity for the women, especially women of color who are imprisoned and who are abused and mistreated and all these things. Yeah, let the whole world know about it. But when you are in prison for your role in a horrific kidnap, torture, and murder of a Long Island businessman, when you're in prison for that and you get out a few years ago, and when you're speaking publicly and you don't address what you did in the past, you don't say, I was justly incarcerated for horrific crimes which I committed, and I'm a new person, I've changed, I regret my actions, but I did learn about the plight of the women, and I want to draw your attention to it. When you don't even do that, you're just hailed as a hero. So you get up and speak. That to me is, well, what kind of spirit is that? Only question I'll ask. 866-34-TRUTH. Let us go to Tina. No, we won't. Let's try Patricia in Queens, New York. Welcome to the line of fire. Hello, Patricia. Are you there? Wow, folks are disappearing. We'll try Brandon. No, look at this. This means lines are opening for all of you. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to our friend Reverend Tom in Boston. Welcome to the line of fire.
Hi, Brother Brown. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Blessings on you and Nancy this new year, and I pray that your book that you cooperated on is highly successful. I know it'll help a lot of people.
Well, thank you.
That said, I wanted to say that I'm disappointed to hear that, you know, you get a number of and not so kind emails and so forth. I've listened to you for some time, and I want to say that I think that you're one of the most fair, open-minded, kind, loving people that I have ever heard on any kind of talk radio program.
Well, Tom, that's very kind of you. I appreciate it. You know, there is not a temptation for me. It's no temptation at all. But there is a tendency with things like live talk radio or things like writing cultural commentary articles where you're supposed to be a certain type of character. And the more obnoxious you are, the more haughty you are, the more insulting you are, the more condescending you are, the more listeners you get. That may work for people, but it's contrary to the spirit of Christ, obviously. It's not who I am going to be. I appreciate those kind words. Let me tell you about some of the response to my meeting with Joseph Prince on the other side of the break. Send it, Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for being part of the broadcast today. You've got questions. We've got answers. Here's the number to call to get in with your question, 866-348-7884. That's 866-34-TRUTH, the number to call. Reverend Tom in Boston, just talking about my interaction with Joseph Prince. In my book, Hyper Grace, I quote him often as a brother, as someone who loves the Lord, but as someone who I believe had some erroneous teachings in the midst of his message. And because of that, many are helped by the truths he delivers, but others are hurt by what I believe are the errors. So we talked candidly about this, and what grieved him most was that he felt he was lumped in with people that he didn't agree with, people who had extreme views, people he doesn't know at all, but they would quote him as if, you know, he's their man or their leader. And I said, well, I did make distinctions, and I did say, no, some hold to this and others hold to this. Still, I understand that I put them all in the class of hyper grace, and he wants me to join with him in warning against counterfeit grace as we discuss other differences. And then I suggest that we highlight our areas of common belief. So, you know, he was as gracious and friendly as could be in that respect. And I lay those things out in the article. He also felt that I didn't fairly represent how many people, the flood of testimonies they hear of people delivered from sexual sin and drunkenness and other problems and marriages getting back together through listening to his message. And I said, I do acknowledge those, but I've also heard the negative stories of people becoming complacent and fleshly. And he said, yeah, well, if they're becoming complacent and fleshly, he's sure they're not understanding grace, because grace is going to teach you not to live an ungodly life and things like that. So anyway, it was great constructive interaction between two brothers, and we've gotten flooded with positive comments. But then you have folks like this: a pity Dr. Brown sees no problem cozying up to a doctrinal heretic and prosperity gospel wolf. Sad indeed. You have those kind of comments. And, you know, someone else saying, is there any charismatic wolf that I won't call out? And interestingly, I didn't see the actual write-up because I had some of these folks blocked on my Twitter feed because of their friends getting abusive. So one gentleman apparently attacked me for what I wrote about Joseph Prince. And the irony is that when I've tried to meet with a leader in his camp, that leader won't even meet with me. So again, it's sad, it's kind of ironic, but this much I know: there are people with a certain attitude, presupposition, critical bent that I'll never be able to please, and I don't worry about it. I feel bad for them. I wish them the best in their walk with the Lord. But you know, there's some people, no matter what you say or do, unless you come to share their very, very narrow extreme opinion, you're not orthodox. So you pray for them and bless them, and wish the best and go on. And it's
Dr. Brown.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was still on. I wanted to ask you something or just make a comment. What had come to my mind when you had mentioned about Joseph Prince, and I really appreciate what you just said, because I'll look for that if you do cooperate on any articles with him. Because I really appreciate your theology. And I have to say, I've never sent you a nasty email or anything, but I got to be totally honest. Sometimes I don't always agree with everything that you say, but I got to tell you, you're a brother, and I love you, and I think people should pray for you and not be so quick to try to read between the lines or go off on a tangent away from the point that you're really trying to make, and just really think about, what Dr. Brown is saying. Pray about it. Read the things that he has to say. Listen to him, and you'll know his heart. That said, the other thing that made me think when you mentioned Joseph Prince was a new writing by Joel Osteen, about You Are God's Masterpiece. And if I may say this, I don't think that any of us are God's masterpiece. I disagree with Joel on that and the exaltation of man. The masterpiece that I see is the masterpiece that hung on the cross and gave his blood in my place for the terrible things that I've done in my life. It only requires that I place my faith in his work and what he's done and in his shed blood. And I'll tell you, that's really the deal of the century, if you ask me. The cross and Jesus, that's God's masterpiece.
I appreciate that. I appreciate your kind words as well. And by the way, I wouldn't expect anyone to agree with everything I say. My dear wife, Nancy, of over 40 years, doesn't agree with everything I say. But I'll tell you this, I'm not going to say anything thoughtlessly. I'm certainly not going to write anything thoughtlessly. I'm not going to put out anything that hasn't been prayerfully considered. Do my best to examine it and consider it scripturally. And then we're still going to have differences. That's what's going to happen in this world. But when I wrote an open letter to Joel Osteen years ago, and I've never been able to meet with him, talk to a key right-hand man of his at some length, but wasn't able to meet with Joel, I understand the point he's making, Ephesians 2, we are God's workmanship, created in Messiah Jesus to do good works. So in that sense, God's done something beautiful and amazing in our lives. But yes, the masterpiece is the cross and the Son of God hanging on the cross and the work of redemption there. And my concern with Joel Osteen's message, which I've openly said, and I consider him a brother, but my concern with the message is, to me, it's primarily just an empty pep talk. It's almost no call to turn from sin. It's almost no exposing of sin. It's almost no dealing on a deeper level with issues where we need to turn. It's pretty much just a positive message of hope, which goes only so far. When you read through the New Testament, you know, Bible is a hope. When you read through the New Testament, you're going to find a whole lot more than that. A whole lot more than that. Whether it's reaching the unbeliever or reaching the believer. So Jesus was a friend of sinners, and he called those sinners to repent and turn from their ways of death and discover new life in him. The pep talk gospel, the exaltation of I am, and hey, let's face it, the great I am. When you read The Power of I Am, a title of one of Joel Osteen's books, the I am, that's, who do you think of? You think of the Lord, but it's confessions that we're to make. I remember seeing him on Oprah with hundreds and hundreds of ladies in the audience. You have to know a good number of them, perhaps the bulk of them were not believers, making all these positive confessions. Well, they simply weren't true. So I really do pray and hope that Joel, with the amazing audience he has, perhaps the largest of any preacher in the world, that he would go deeper and bring a deeper message to many that he could help. Hey, thank you for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, we reconnect with Tina in Teaneck, New Jersey. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi.
Go ahead.
My question is about the plagues, the first three plagues in Egypt. It seems as though when you read the Bible that the Israelites were affected by the first three, because on the fourth one, he said God makes a difference. And I want to know what your opinion is, and why do you say whatever you say?
Yeah, you are right. When you read it, for example, the turning the water into blood, and it doesn't say that it didn't affect the Israelites, and then the frogs coming out of the water, it doesn't say that it didn't affect the Israelites. When you get further on, and then some so striking, there's just complete darkness over all of Egypt, but not where the Israelites are. Of course, at the end, the smiting of the firstborn, that God makes an absolute distinction. So there are two possibilities, Tina. The first is that God always made that distinction, but it's not recorded. But then again, you have to presuppose that because the text doesn't tell us. The other would be that often in this world, we are affected by judgment that happens all around us. For example, Baruch the scribe, who was Jeremiah's right-hand man, he did not live like a king in exile. What God just said is, I'm going to preserve your life. You're not going to die. If God was to shake America with judgment, the believers would have some aspect of grace in the midst of it and some aspect of protection. But if the world was starving around them, I could assure you that that the believers would not be feasting on filet mignon every day. In other words, our needs would be supernaturally met, that we'd be affected by the judgment as well. So when God judges a nation, the wicked are punished, but the righteous will still suffer some of the consequences of it. There were righteous people who went into exile in Babylon. In fact, God said it was the righteous that he was going to send into exile and preserve their lives. So it could be, Tina, that as the judgment began, everybody's affected by it initially. And then God says, all right, now watch, now watch. And he makes the separation loud and clear. And all of Egypt recognizes, oh my, God is making a distinction between his people and the people of Egypt.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Isn't it striking that today, March for Life, anniversary of Roe v. Wade, that today is also the day 72 years ago that Auschwitz was liberated, January 27th, 1945. Isn't that something? 866-348-7884. We go to BJ in Round Rock, Texas. Welcome to The Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Hey, I had a question about a Bible verse. 2 Kings 3:27, I believe it is.
All right.
I've always wondered about that Bible verse. It says the context: Israel and Judah and Edom are fighting against Moab, and the Moabite king can't escape. And it says he takes his oldest son and sacrifices him.
Yep.
And then great wrath came upon Israel, so they departed and went home. So I've always wondered, it sounds to me like it's saying after Edom sacrificed his son, child sacrifice, for some reason, wrath came upon the nation of Israel. That's very odd phrasing to me. So I thought maybe there was something in the Hebrew I was missing, or I was just misunderstanding it.
There's nothing you're missing in the Hebrew whatsoever, and you're not the only one who's wondered about it. I've wondered about it, and I've read commentaries on it and not been satisfied. I'm looking at a rabbinic commentary, Rashi, who is the foremost Jewish commentator on Scripture. And he explains that the where it says great wrath came against Israel, that he explains, for their iniquities were remembered, that they too worship pagan deities and are not worthy of miracles, God's miracles of intervention, that of course you read about earlier in this chapter. But it is a bit of a mystery. There's nothing that in my view the Hebrew tells us any differently than the English. It's not a translation issue. There's nothing peculiar about it. It's not that the words are odd. I mean, I've wondered, was there something wrong that the Israelites were doing in prosecuting this war, which then provoked the king to sacrifice his firstborn son, and because of that there was wrath. To me, that's stretching it a bit, but. You know, because it seems like they're rightly prosecuting a war here against the king of Moab. And is it what Rashi, the Jewish commentator, says, that great wrath was on the Israelites? Because when he does this, he remembers their sins and their worship of idols and perhaps their sacrificing of their own children to idols. And because of that, judgment comes. I mean, if it was great abhorrence that the Israelites were just absolutely shocked, you know, and that's what it meant. You know, that was the point, that they were just furious, and they were indignant, and they just said, "Oh, forget it," and they left. You know, we're not going to fight. Look at this, is the horror he committed, and they just left. You know, that to me would work contextually, except it doesn't seem to say that. It's looking at different translations, the fury against Israel was great. There was an outburst of divine anger against Israel. There was great anger against Israel. Such great anger came upon Israel. A great wrath came upon Israel. I don't have any other answer for you. It's a curiosity to me, and I haven't been satisfied with things I read in commentaries. So we will continue to wonder about it, and if something really strikes me as explaining it, I'll let you know.
Well, thank you. I do know that there are some Bible verses that are odd and that stump us, but that doesn't mean, obviously, we should throw our hands up, of course.
So, oh, no, listen.
I understand
there's a reason. You have to understand, it's not just that somebody wrote it, okay, and it just ended up in the Bible. You have editors who've gone through the text afterwards, or people who've copied manuscripts, and then others that agree, okay, this is sacred text, and it's part of Scripture. And if there was something that was considered that peculiar or odd, the question is, would it even make its way in? As I'm looking in the cultural commentary, the portion written by John Walton, he said, here the mechanism of sacrifice is not explicitly described. We're only told that the child was the king's firstborn son, the sacrifice of something exceedingly precious in an exceedingly critical situation. Jephthah's vow is similar to this, though his sacrifice of his daughter comes after the fact in Judges 11. But he doesn't explain the great wrath part either. So to me, this is something very profound that I'm missing. This is something very profound that the Bible is telling us that I'm somehow missing for lack of more information. But again, this is why we keep studying and learning. Sometimes it's a translation issue, but not the case here. All right, I appreciate the call, but I hate when I'm asked a question about something that I've studied over the years and never been satisfied with, and I can't give a more definitive answer. So it drives me to want to study and look at other explanations more. It's not that there aren't explanations offered. It's just I haven't been satisfied by what I've seen thus far. Maybe I've seen a right explanation and just not grasped it myself. Hey, God bless, man. Appreciate the question. All right, friends, stay right there. If you're on hold, stay right there. And as soon as we get into the new hour, I'm going to go right to the phone. So that means if you're on hold, you're coming next. But this is a great time to call now, because I'll be able to take your call at the beginning of the new hour. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Okay, just another reminder. If at any point on the local radio station where you listen to this broadcast, we do a programming change. I don't believe it's affecting anyone. Well, it may be affecting some listening right now as I think of it. We are looking to expand our reach across America to get into more and more stations, and then to do more and more internet-based things as well as we continue to expand by God's grace in 2017. In the process, we may have to temporarily go off certain stations and then realign on some new stations, but you never have to miss a moment. In the next few days, we'll be making some announcements about a brand new app. It's going to be a terrific app for you to use on your cell phone, and you don't need a radio. You don't need anything. All you'll need is that cell phone, and you just, boom, press on it, and it'll take you right to a live feed for the show. You'll be able to call in from there as well. All right, my bottom line today, as the March for Life takes place, may this be the year for the turning of America to life.
You've got questions, we've got answers. I'm ready. Let's do it.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, did you hear this? Did you hear this news with all the talk about immigration policy, building a wall, that President Trump's executive order would prioritize Christian refugees? It's something I've urged for some time. I'm sure one of many voices urging that, saying that Christian refugees in Muslim countries are the ultimate refugees because they're getting hit from every side. They can't be part of either Islamic faction or multiple factions. They're especially targeted because of their Christian faith. And many of them don't even make it into refugee camps, which are not safe for them either. And they are not going to be prone to terror, quite the opposite. So for that reason alone, and as a majority Christian country, it would make sense to do it. You may not have heard that reported, but I've been reading about that. And that to me is something right and good. All right. It is January 27th, which is the 44th annual March for Life, and Governor Mike Pence spoke. This is the first time a vice president has spoken at the event, and Kellyanne Conway, the White House campaign spokesperson, I forget the exact current title, she spoke. So there was White House staff that was part of the March for Life. And again, may this be the year when hearts really turn on a deeper level. And I believe there'll be a great contrast in spirit, attitude, the speeches, the attitude of the protesters, the pro-life protesters, the pro-life marchers, as opposed to those many of those participating in the women's march last weekend. I even wonder, I believe, in fact, that they'll do a much better job cleaning up. D.C. was littered with anti-Trump signs after the women's march, saw lots of pictures of them. And I just think the pro-life folks know, hey, clean up your mess when you leave. Very different spirit in both of these events from what I can tell. And I wrote about it in advance, and you can expect that. Read the article at thelineoffire.org. All right, you've got questions. We've got answers. Any question you have of any kind whatsoever, as long as it's appropriate for Christian radio and I can help you, give me a call. If you have questions on my meeting with Pastor Joseph Prince and the article that I wrote mentioning our differences but highlighting our areas of commonality, if you have questions about that, give me a call, 866-34-TRUTH. We will start in Houston, Texas. Tori, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Dr. Brown. I have a question about Deborah. She's always kind of confounded me, and I've heard a lot of different people have a lot of different opinions. For instance, this one person told me once that, you know, she was just a prophetess and, like, she wasn't a leader, and then someone on the other spectrum will say, well, that means women can do whatever they want in any foreign ministry. They can even be, like, the Pope, you know, that kind of, those two different extremes. You know, knowing a little bit about Jewish culture back then and even ancient culture and how women were viewed or what their roles were, like, who was she? Like, she seems like an anomaly. Like, I just don't understand, like, who was she?
Yeah, well, you're exactly right in terms of her being an anomaly. And she absolutely was the primary leader of the nation. She was the judge, the shofet, the one that led the nation, that the people went to for guidance, that prosecuted war and things like that. However, it was the exception to the rule. She was the only such person in the book of Judges who was not male. So while you have other female prophetesses, Miriam is called a prophetess, the sister of Moses, Huldah, who lived in Jeremiah's day, a prophetess, others known as prophetesses, Philip having daughters who were prophetesses, that's not uncommon, but her leadership role was uncommon. I'll explain how that applies when we come back.
God of light, hear our cry, send It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you so much for being part of our Friday broadcast. You've got questions, we've got answers. 866-348-7884. Reading some Jerusalem news report from Barry and Batya Siegel's ministry, President Donald Trump is working on an executive order to slash all funding to UN agencies that give full membership to the Palestinian Authority or the Palestine Liberation Organization, so the PA and the PLO. The executive order would also cut funding to UN agencies or other international bodies that support programs funding abortion, back activity, bypassing sanctions against Iran and North Korea, is controlled or substantially influenced by any state that sponsors terrorism, is blamed for systemic human rights violations. This was reported on Wednesday, but I'm just sharing it with you today. Something, again, very significant in my view. 866-34-TRUTH. So back to you, Tari, in Houston. Deborah, to me, is then a picture of women in senior leadership positions. God can raise them up in that regard. They can be powerfully used, but it is the exception to the rule that the general rule of governmental headship is male, that women can be gifted to serve in all kinds of different ways, including preaching and teaching, including being used in the gifts of the Spirit, including administrative gifts and things like that. Proverbs 31, speaking of the godly woman there, she's certainly administrative. She certainly takes the bull by the horns. She certainly makes independent decisions. She's certainly strong. Again, the husband would have the normal role as the head of the house, and senior leadership in the body, as I see it scripturally, is to be male. However, God does use women powerfully as pastors, as church planters, in other ministries. When I was in Singapore, one of the events we had, I was speaking at a dinner for business leaders and some key pastors, and there was a woman there, one of the top leaders in all of Singapore, American woman who served there for many, many years, pastored a church for years. So there are Deborahs today. It's just not the norm or the rule. So you don't want to read too much out of it. You don't want to minimize her role. But even in ancient Israelite culture, when she's going to war, and there's Barak and others involved, she wants to make sure that the man leads the way. Otherwise, it would be shameful if a woman led the way rather than a man. And, of course, she was the stronger one in the midst of it. So that's she is exactly who she was. She was the judge of her day, a strong leader, godly, a prophetess, and yet the exception to the rule.
Well, if I may ask a quick follow-up.
Sure.
How would you, because I'm always a little hesitant, like I totally agree that males are, that have headship. How would you, and so I'm a little hesitant when like there's a woman in a strong leadership, but at the hierarchy. How would you discern, I guess you would, same way you would discern if a man was someone worthy to follow, if it was a woman?
Yeah. Again, it's not the norm, but I would use similar tests. I would use similar tests about personal godliness, about being proficient in Scripture, about being relational, about being a person submitted to authority, and things like that. I would examine the same way. And there are gifted, anointed women that I know that are powerful leaders. But in all those cases, if they're married, they still recognize their husbands as the head of the home in that respect.
Yeah.
And look, there are some husbands that are complete wimps. There are some pastors that are not courageous at all, and their wives are much more courageous,
So
again, just because there are certain positions given, it doesn't mean that the person lives up to their stature. And it doesn't – just because you may not be the senior leader doesn't mean that you can't be a powerful leader and an anointed leader and a world changer. But even if you look in that score, world leaders – so all around the world, you had a Golda Meir in Israel, right? But you've had all men aside from that. And Israel is a very liberated society in that regard in terms of women in leadership. It just seems to be the larger pattern, the way God constituted us and differences he made. I know when I look at what a woman does and what her giftings are and her strengths are, I don't know how many mothers and many women, single women and married women, are able to do what they do. I have tremendous admiration for courage, for strength, for all these other things. That being said, at the same time, we each have our gifts and our strengths. And I know in our household, I've said this many times, my wife Nancy is the strongest person that I know, the most immovable person. If she has a conviction, the most immovable person that I know. People think I'm immovable with my convictions. She's even more immovable. Yet she 100% looks to me to be the head of the house, 100%.
Yeah.
And 100% expects me, let's say if there was a storm, that I'm the one to make sure that the family is protected and safe.
Yeah.
And again, it's just each of us functioning in our roles. And unfortunately, Tori, in our day, even in the church, we've had a breakdown in gender distinctions and recognition of the various gifts that God's given to men, that God's given to women, and the beauty of that and the mutuality of that and the complementarity of that, because of which we've blurred some of this in the church, and it's very easy for the world to go even further with it. Hey, thank you for the call and the questions. 866-34-TRUTH. Just looking at this note from Donald Trump to hundreds of thousands of pro-life Americans in Washington, D.C. This is his tweet. The March for Life is so important to all of you marching. You have my full support. Terrific to see that. Glad to see that. And again, first time a sitting vice president has spoken at such an event. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Braylon in Brooklyn. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, hello, Michael Brown. God bless you.
God bless you.
Thank you so much for you. You know, thank God for you. I've been learning a lot from you. Thank you so much. I wanted to ask you because, you know, the Lord set me free from pornography addiction, masturbation, 2014, November, marijuana addiction. But lately I've been, like, struggling, you know, like, not being responsible with my work, coming early or waking up early. And sometimes I feel like it's so heavy. And I don't know. It's just like I want to do the will of God, but it's like I feel so heavy. And the other night I was praying, and I just feel like I was talking to God, right? And I feel like I'm talking to myself. And I don't know if that a sin, like, you know, to doubt. And it's just like I need someone, you know, I don't know, give me advice or something.
Sure thing, Braylon. Thank God first that He's delivered you from these other vices and bondages which many struggle with and don't find freedom. And be assured that whenever you direct your heart towards the Lord, be assured whenever you pray, whenever you talk to him, whenever you think thoughts, when you're dialoguing with him in your mind, he's listening, he hears, he sees. I remember, Braylon, when I was a fairly new believer, and I was so used to, I always experienced the presence of God in a rich way whenever I would pray, and in particular, whenever I'd be in one of our church services. I mean, the Lord was there, and I would experience his presence. And I was in one of our night services, and it had been like a day and a half where I just did not experience the conscious presence of God the way I was used to. And I just said, Lord, can I feel your presence again? I was a new believer, and he was so gracious to just be so near to me in those days. And I said, Lord, can I just feel your presence again? And suddenly that joy, that sense of life, that nearness of God just flooded me. And I remember feeling a little bad. It was during the church service thinking, what am I, some kind of baby that I can't go a day and a half without feeling this? And just literally at that moment, the pastor of this church, it was a little Pentecostal church, he spoke in tongues, and then he delivered the interpretation. I'm talking about the split second this was happening, and the interpretation was from the end of Matthew 28, lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the world, whether you feel me or not. It just, boom, yeah. It hit me right between the eyes in a wonderful way. That's the truth. We walk by faith, not by sight. We walk by faith, not by feeling. So be assured, even when you feel nothing, that he's near. And what I would do tonight or today when you have a break, sir, I just get alone and just have a long talk with him like you're talking to me and just tell him everything. I'm struggling with this, having a problem here, don't know how to deal with this, I'm feeling irresponsible. Lord, I just need your help. Put it all in his hands. 1 Peter chapter 5 says, be anxious about, it says there, excuse me, quoting the wrong verse, that he cares for you. Not just for you as a worker, he cares for you. Cast your cares on him. He'll carry you. Watch and see.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. I was putting together Philippians 4 and 1 Peter 5 and Psalm 55 in my mind as I was answering the question. Psalm 55 tells us to cast our burdens on the Lord. He'll sustain us. Philippians 4 tells us not to be anxious about anything, but everything with prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, make our requests known to God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will guard our hearts and minds. And Messiah Jesus in 1 Peter 5, telling us to cast our anxiety on him, for he cares for us. Remember, decades ago, a brother teaching on that pointed out, it doesn't say he cares for your work, but he cares for you. Don't just think he cares about what you can produce for him and what you can do for him. He cares for you. This is Michael Brown, and you're listening to The Line of Fire, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Any question you have of any kind where I can be of help to you, if it's appropriate for Christian radio, give me a call, 866-348-7884. Everybody listening to me all over Raleigh, Cary, North Carolina, I'm going to be with you for 5 days, God willing, beginning Sunday morning, and then Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night. That's right, 5 nights and Sunday morning at the Cary Church of God. Meetings are free, open to the public. Come any night. Each night will be a separate message in itself. The overall theme, of course, will be revival. I say, of course, that's what I've been asked to be preaching on. That's the theme. But these are not just jump and shout and get emotional meetings. These are meetings where we want to dig into the Word and give you an opportunity to really encounter God afresh in your own life. If you listen to the broadcast and you're able to greet me before or after the service, please let me know that you are a regular listener. We've been on these stations now for over 8 years. 866-348-7884. If you need directions to Cary Church of God or anything like that, just go to AskDrBrown.org, and you'll see it right there on the itinerary. All right, let's go to the phones with Carl in Greensboro, North Carolina. Thank you for calling The Line of Fire.
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks.
Yes. The question I want to ask was about, it's not very spiritual in a sense, but it is too, was about your weight loss and what made you do it.
Yes, sir. And it's very spiritual, in fact. All right, so Nancy and I tell the story in our book, Breaking the Stronghold of Food. And I want to tell you why the change came and how the change came. But first, let me just glorify the Lord. I've written now close to 30 books, and this book by far, Breaking the Stronghold of Food, is off to the best start of any book that I've written. I think one big reason is because Nancy's in it too, and she's just amazingly wise and practical. Also because it's our story of life transformation, having to deal with food where everyone has to deal with it. It has been for days on and off since it came out. And again, now the number one new release in Christian personal growth on all of the Amazon.com website, which is massive. There's a new book added. I heard every 5 minutes, but wow. here's what happened. I, for years, all my life, have had unhealthy eating habits. I was not a glutton. every day I would say no to certain things. I would never eat whatever I wanted all day long. But I had unhealthy eating habits my entire life. As a boy, I used to have Oreos for breakfast. I've been addicted to chocolate almost my entire life. My favorite single food just to eat every day was pizza. And, you know, all the cheese and the bread and things like that. And it was just my lifestyle. So as the years go on, you get older, you start to get heavier. Yeah, so, you know, the way I could eat in my 20s, I couldn't eat in my 50s. My blood pressure was getting high. It was as high as 149 over 103. And it's called the silent killer. And Nancy kept telling me, you can't mess with this. You can't play with this. And I said, look, I keep this intense schedule. I'm fine. She said, yeah, that's the problem. You know, it's abusive to do it. My cholesterol for years was always high, a little over 200 normally. And the problem was the bad was high and the good was low. I had severe sleep apnea. I had to use a breathing machine even when I traveled. I had headaches several days a week, you know, 3-4 headaches a week. I had lower back pain all the time. I was getting tired more and more. Nonetheless, I was thriving in terms of busy, running hard, preaching, ministering, but I was wearing out. And I began to think, I want to speed up, not slow down as I get older. I have so much I want to do for the Lord. The harvest is so ripe. How am I going to do that? I started to think of the future, and instead of being excited, I can't wait for what's coming, I was like, man, am I going to be able to do this? And I was embarrassed. Even though I was a big guy and worked out, people just thought I'm big boned or, you know, big guy. The fact is, I went from 275 pounds to 180. I lost 95 pounds.
Wow.
I was 95 pounds overweight. People said maybe you have to lose 20, 30 pounds, maybe 50, not 95. But that's what I needed to lose to get to my ideal weight. And I was embarrassed being overweight because I said it's not in harmony with who I am and how I live, which is discipline. And Nancy was praying for me about the health issues. We were both crying out simultaneously without knowing the other had. She had changed her whole lifestyle following Dr. Joel Fuhrman's guidelines, eat to live, heavily plant-based diet. And the problem was all the foods I liked to eat, I couldn't eat anymore except for salad. I could keep eating. And I'd have to eat all these new foods I've never eaten my whole life. And I knew there was no way to do it while traveling. Well, August 23rd of 2014, I said to her, my plan's not working. I need to make a change. She had been praying. She said, all right, just eat what I give you to eat. So I went cold turkey off all the bad stuff. And it was 3 days of miserable withdrawal symptoms, literally.
Right.
It was worse getting off cookies, you know, chocolate cookies and stuff like that. It was harder to give up chocolate than to give up heroin. God is my witness. But I realized this is all the bad stuff is leaving my body. This is all the poisons leaving my body.
Right.
That's a good thing. And then I had to renew my mind. Food was not my reward after preaching, ministering, and traveling. I eat this. No. Food is the fuel for life. Then I had to renew my palate. Your palate will want what you feed it. And within 8 months, sir, I lost 95 pounds, not by dieting, but by a new lifestyle. And I've stayed around 5 pounds of that range pretty much, put on a little more muscle, you know, but right in that range by eating the same way. My blood pressure went from 149 over 103 down to 100 over 65. My cholesterol went from a high of 230 down to 123, the good being high, the bad being low.
Wow.
I even though doctors said there was nothing that could be done about my sleep apnea, I lost so much weight that I lost weight in the back of my throat and back of my tongue, so I don't need the breathing machine anymore. I've not had a headache in 2.5 weeks, 2.5 years, excuse me. I've not had a headache in 2.5 years. All the lower back pain disappeared. My immune system is off the charts. So my energy level, everything transformed. And the key thing is no exceptions ever. That there's a new lifestyle, just like if I was a former alcoholic, don't have a drink, don't play games with it, because you open the door to fall back. That's been a major key. We tell the story in the book, but Carl, you've won yourself a free copy of Breaking the Stronghold of Fruit. Howard, get Carl's address and we'll send him a copy.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to the line of fire. Today is an important day in our nation. It is the 44th annual March for Life and the grieving memory of Roe v. Wade and the hope of turning the nation around towards life, towards the unborn, towards these precious innocent ones. And I believe that progress is being made. And if you haven't heard the news, we've been talking about it. If you haven't heard the news, this March for Life is the first time that a sitting vice president has addressed the crowd. There were White House staff members marching in the March for Life, and President Trump said, "You have my full support." Just amazing that Donald Trump ends up being this champion of life. Did you see the broadcast yesterday on James Robinson's TV show, James and Betty Robinson? Life Today airs on hundreds of stations across America, where I talked about our new book, Breaking the Stronghold of Food. We continue to be thrilled with the reviews we're hearing. What's really neat is people telling us by the time they finish losing the book, they've already lost 10 pounds and they're starting to feel differently, already implementing the things that we suggest to implement. So check it out. If you don't have it yet, read the reviews over at Amazon, Breaking the Stronghold of Food, How We Conquered Food Addiction, Discovered a New Way of Living. If the book's been a blessing to you, please post your review there because this helps other readers to get feedback. I'm always looking for that. I just went to buy something yesterday that someone had recommended to me. But first, I read the reviews to see here, the positive reviews, here, the negative reviews, look at are overwhelmingly positive, and then a little bit more there. And I say, okay, good, good, that looks good. Go ahead and do that. Again, this is the number one new release in Christian personal growth on Amazon. It's doing better than any book we've ever written, any book I've ever written, and the first one Nancy and I have written together. And, you know, the fact that I got put on the front cover of Charisma Magazine, the January edition, for this story, it was absolutely not about me. It was immaterial to me. It was my face on the front of a magazine. I've joked that normally if I'm on the front of something, I'm getting blasted or attacked. But it meant that this was an important issue. Believers changing their lifestyles and eating healthily, and the benefits that come your way are such. Listen, more people will be miraculously healed reading this book, miraculously because of just eating healthily, and it seems like a miracle. More people will be healed reading this book and implementing what's said than I believe in 100 healing meetings. Why? Because a lot of our sicknesses are things that we can reverse just through our diet. So many are. And healing is a miracle, but it's the exception to the normal experience, whereas if we eat healthily, that'll be the normal experience. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. It's Friday. You know what that means. You've got questions. We've got answers. Any question of any kind whatsoever that you can ask on Christian Radio, or if you want to differ with me on something or probe something, give me a call, 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Durham, North Carolina. Bryant, welcome to the line of fire.
Good afternoon, Dr. Brown.
Hey.
I haven't listened to your show for a while, so I'm not sure if anybody has asked this or mentioned this. Please hear me out. If you can pull up Luke 13:32.
Got it. Yep, I know the verse.
So, it doesn't look familiar. It sounds really odd. It says, "And he said unto them, Go ye and tell that fox."
Right, speaking about Herod, just so folks have the context, the Pharisees were warning him that Herod wanted to kill him, and Jesus said, "Go and tell that fox." Right. Behold, I cast out demons and perform cures today and tomorrow, and the third day I shall be perfect, or I'll complete my work. I'll finish my course. Yes, sir.
Yes, if you take today and tomorrow, they're both separated. They're both misspelled.
That's just King James spelling. That's all. That's King James spelling. That's all it is. There's nothing to it beyond that, sir. It has nothing to do with the Greek. It has nothing to do with what Jesus would have said in Hebrew or Aramaic. It's not found in any other modern translations. It's just King James spelling.
It's fire we want, for fire we please. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes, so Brian, just to say one more thing about the today as two separate words and tomorrow as two separate words. Just with a click of the mouse on my Bible software in front of me, I found 76 times where today in the King James occurs as two words. And if I do the same for tomorrow, let's see, I get how many? Oh, 50, 60 hits, something like that. Over and over. So it's just the spelling in the King James. Okay, it has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with the Hebrew or the Greek. You should 100% ignore it. I assure you of that. It just means today, just means tomorrow. So I assure you of that, sir. All right, thanks for spotting it, though. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to David in Utah. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure thing.
I have a comment first. You had a gentleman on your program about a month ago who was doing some marvelous work on abortion, and I must applaud him. He seems to be doing a great job. My question to you is, why do these organizations make it so hard for a good Christian family, or anybody for that matter, to adopt a child? So expensive and so hard when these kids just need good homes. Like, for example, I have a son and his wife, good Christians, but it's so expensive. And is there any organization that makes it easier or cheaper to adopt a child?
I must confess my ignorance of how exactly, why exactly the costs are where they are. I know there's a ton of red tape. We've had friends that have adopted kids from overseas, and it's taken so long. Part of it, I know, is because of the fear that kids could be sold into sex trafficking or something like that, that they could be, quote, adopted by someone that's just going to abuse them. And because of that, there's a lot that has to be done. Now, I appreciate that, and I think that's a good thing. But otherwise, I don't know why all the red tape is there. And off the top of my head, I don't know organizations that are able to make it easier. Now, I do know of some that have worked with a prospective mother, and she can't keep her baby. She doesn't want to keep her baby. So early on, things are done so that the moment the baby is born, that the new parents are able to adopt that child as their own, you know, right from birth. And again, I know Christian organizations that try to bypass whatever red tape they can. I just don't know off the top of my head which are the best. I would encourage you, though, to just get online and look up Bound for Life. It's a pro-life organization, and okay. It's of course, opposing abortion, Bound for Life. And I believe it's the number four, number4life.com. Yeah, I believe that's it. And for sure, they are in touch with the different adoption organizations, because the pro-life organizations I know all have a wing, an arm, that is a pro-adoption arm as well. And mm-hmm. Perhaps they can recommend some organization that is able to bypass some of the red tape and make it less costly. I mean, you're tens of thousands of dollars normally involved, and then becomes especially complicated when it's a child from overseas. It's in hardship, and you're trying to have compassion on this kid and bring him over. Becomes even more difficult. We have other friends who are involved with different adoption initiatives. I just don't know the details in terms of how, what ages and how it works. So reach out to the folks at Bound for Life, and I'm sure they'll be able to refer you in the right direction. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, got disconnected from Bryant in Durham. You had a follow-up question, sir. Sorry we got disconnected. Back to you.
Yes. I'm going to try to make it brief.
I'm surprised that you might not know, but the Bible is not the same. I've been reading the Bible for over 20 years. As in the verse referring to wine, the new wine and wineskins from the King James Authorized Version.
But the King James is just, it's an English translation that's excellent, but has a lot of errors in it.
Excuse me? It no longer says wineskin in any King James Authorized Version. It says bottles.
Well, give me the verse. What's the point? The King James, the original King James, 1611, which was just a translation, a very good translation, but just a translation. It's not the original Hebrew or Greek. It's just a translation that has errors in it, okay? That, you've never read that. You've never seen that. You wouldn't even understand a lot of the spelling, okay? It's been modified over the years. But the King James I read when I was first saved, okay, in 1971 that I read and read through cover to cover four or five times and memorized thousands of verses from, that's identical to today. If you get a King James Bible today, it's the exact same one.
Yes, I have a 76. I've been reading for over 20 years. And I remember vividly reading wineskin in that Bible. My Bible no longer says wineskins, it says bottles. But I have hundreds of new words. I have hundreds of misspellings. I have hundreds of grammar errors.
Well, what are you reading? Yeah, I'm trying to be helpful, but what are you actually reading?
Any authorized King James Version will have everything I just mentioned.
No, it hasn't been checked. Wineskins is still a word that's used, okay?
It's not if in you, the King James.
Okay, here.
Look it up, Dr. Brown. Look it up.
Okay, which verse are you speaking about?
I don't know it off the top of my head, but if you give me a couple of seconds, I can get it for you. I thought you might know that one off the top of my head.
All right, so you're talking about, okay. Right, so what you're dealing with is, you're talking about, say, Matthew 9:17, they don't put new wine into old wineskins, right? And
that
you're saying, right, for sure, so there's been another revision. Okay, now I can sort this out. Now I understand. Got it. Okay. Yeah, for sure. The King James, when I read it years ago, did say wineskins. There's obviously a new updating of it, because every few, it could be every 100 years or something, they update it. So whatever this new updating is, does say bottles, which is odd. I agree with you. That's odd. So the new updating of the King James, whenever that was done, which I haven't followed, to be candid, has made some changes. And it's a little bit odd because here, the King James, neither do men put new wine into old bottles, else the bottles break and the wine runneth out and the bottles perish, but they put new wine into new bottles and both preserve. So it uses the old English runneth, right? But then it substitutes, it definitely said wineskins, you're 100% right. And the new King James still says wineskins. And a number of most contemporary versions, in fact, every version I'm looking at says wineskins. So whoever did this revision of the King James, it's strange. I agree with you.
But my issue is I have the same Bible that I read as a kid. I still have it. That one says bottles.
The one you read as a kid says bottles.
Yes, the exact same Bible.
Yeah,
Bible.
I must have read, there must have been a change in editions. So now you got me wondering, because when I got saved in 1971, for sure it said wineskins, and so there must have been a revision a few years after that made some of these changes.
But if you look at the 1611 online version, it says bottles.
Oh, the 1611 says bottles. So it got changed. So they went back to the. All right,
but
now.
How do you change paper that's in my house?
Okay.
I know it sounds.
It didn't change. Somehow we're remembering differently. This is, you know what I got to do? I've got to, when I get home, because I can't do it now, I'm going to take out, I still have the King James Bible. that I got when I was saved. And I'm going to take it out and read what it says, because I'm remembering wineskins as well. And you're remembering wineskins for sure, sir, for sure. This is really interesting. And thanks for being patient so I can finally figure out the issue here. I don't know. Obviously, it didn't change on the paper. It obviously didn't change on the paper. So how are we remembering wineskins when you're saying the original King James said wineskins and the King James I have online here, said bottles. And what I have online says bottles. You got me wondering here, buddy. Hey, I got to check at home. I'll dig into this. When I find out, I'll let you know. Thank you, sir.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Was it President George W. Bush who said he misremembered? Is that one of his words? Are Bryant and I misremembering what the King James said? So tell you what, if you've got a King James Bible around, a physical one, not an online one, physical one, take a look at it and say, go to Matthew 9:17. You have this parable of the wineskins in Matthew 9, Mark 2, Luke 5, all right? And go to Matthew 9:17 and see if it says bottles or wineskins. Now, from what I can tell, they all say bottles. But I remember the way Bryant remembers that it said wineskins. So the only thing I can think is that once I started reading other translations, that just got stuck in my head, and we always talked about the parable of the wineskins, and that somehow we're misremembering. And by the way, why did the King James translate bottle? Well, just checking on one website, is bottle's an accurate word in the King James Bible? Mentions 1828 Noah's Webster's dictionary that bottle could refer to a hollow vessel of glass, wood, leather, or other material with a narrow mouth for holding and carrying liquors. And then back to the Smith's Bible Dictionary, bottle, one Greek and four Hebrew words are translated bottle, and it lists them. Bottles are of skins or of earth or glass, so that the translation would have made better sense than we now think of it as pertaining to glass. I know it still could mean leather in some forms, but we think of it as glass, and obviously that wouldn't have been the case. That's not what Jesus was referring to, so it would have been bottle with an older meaning. I'm looking in, interesting, other verses. Let's see, it mentions bottles in Joshua 9, where it's clearly not glass bottles. Twice there, 1 Samuel 5, two bottles of wine, probably mean wineskins there. Job 32 here, a burst like new bottles, no, like new wineskins. Just looking at these different references here. So it just seems that was a way that they translated, instead of wineskins, said bottles. So I'd have to say that rather than this being changed at some point, that we're misremembering. I was in Israel a few years back filming for Day of Discovery with my friends, Messianic Jewish scholars, Michael Rudelnik and Avner Boski. And we were at this amazing synagogue in Israel. And it had an inscription which seemed to be an inscription about Yeshua. And if so, could well have been a Messianic Jewish synagogue. And in any case, we were talking about different things and got to quoting verses in Hebrew. And I referenced a particular word in Hebrew that occurred at the end of Micah 7. And they said, no, that's not there. Here's how it ends. And Avner had it in mind because it was part of a prayer, a traditional prayer that he had said regularly. And I said, no, I'd studied it. I know it's there. And what I did was, they said, you're putting, and then I said, okay, hang on. So I quoted the last verses of Micah 7 by heart from Hebrew, the last three verses. And I thought, oh, it's not there. And what had happened was I was just putting something together from earlier in Micah that I had studied and put it together there. I conflated the verses. I was so sure until I quoted my own mind. I mean, I quoted the verses because I'd memorized them in Hebrew, and I thought, ooh, I misremembered. Chuck it up to jet lag, right? So, you know, that does happen. That does happen. And my guess is that hearing wineskins for years, that's what we remember seeing. So for sure, it did not change on the page. Identity politics. Let me just take a minute and say, where did that come from? Well, I'm thinking March for Life in contrast with the Women's March. One of the listed speakers at the Women's March was Ida Hurtado, a feminist leader. Here are some of her quotes. "White men need white women in a way that they do not need women of color, because women of color cannot fulfill white men's needs for racially pure offspring." She also said, "White men perceive women of color primarily as workers and as objects of sexual power and aggression. Their sexual objectification of women of color allows white men to express power and aggression sexually without the emotional entanglements of the rituals that are required in relationships with women of their own group." This is the type of destructive identity politics that has been dividing our nation for years now, and which often comes from the left, the alleged progressive left, which others have called the regressive left. Radio, YouTube commentator David Rubin and others refer to it as the regressive left. And I can assure you that there was not a word of identity politics spoken at the March for Life today. And in contrast with Madonna's unfortunate words, where she said that she had thoughts of blowing up the White House, of course, with Donald Trump being in it now, at the March for Life, Eric Metaxas led people in praying for Madonna. And as one of our staff members shared with me right before the show, that he said he doesn't have thoughts about blowing up her house because he's a Christian. So may the nation see a difference in tone and spirit. It doesn't mean everything said at the Women's March was wrong. It doesn't mean every concern raised at the Women's March was wrong. It means that there are very, very different attitudes, a real contrast in spirit. And I would say that if you focus on the word redemption and the concepts of life, that you find a great difference. Think of redemption, life, hope, and dignity. These are the major themes of the March for Life. Contrast that with the anger and the even degrading feminism that took place, the embarrassing feminism that took place, and some of the vitriol that took place at the Women's March. You see two very different spirits, and it's just something that happens when life is denigrated. Remember, if you were a pro-life group and wanted to participate in the Women's March because you had concerns about President Trump, you weren't welcome. Such is the reality of the day. May light triumph over darkness. Hey, if you live anywhere in the Raleigh, North Carolina area, I'll be speaking beginning this Sunday, 5 days at the Cary Church of God. I can't remember the last time I did this in a congregation. 5 days, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, the Cary Church of God. So very close to Raleigh, and look forward to seeing you there. If you're one of our regular listeners, come up and greet me before or after a service as we have opportunity. And remember to check out our special offer on thelineoffire.org. It is a liberating, life-giving, life-transforming offer and a great way to start the new year. And when you're there, check out our latest articles and our latest videos. And remember, post your review. If you've read and been helped by Breaking the Stronghold of Food, post your review on Amazon.com. My bottom line today, God's ways bring life, redemption, hope, and they will triumph over the ways of darkness.